Whenever you're ready.
Okay, Jamie, thank you. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Orange County Juvenile Justice Coordinating Council SB 823 subcommittee meeting for Thursday, June 17th, 2021. We'll go ahead and take a roll call for those that are here. My name is Steve Sentman. I'm the chair of our subcommittee. And we have Lynn Garrett.
No, not yet.
Okay, Steve Kim.
Hi, everyone present. Steve Kim representing the community.
Thank you, Steve. Judge Motoriki?
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm present.
Thank you. Raymond Sanchez?
Here, present.
Thank you. Don Smith?
Present.
Thank you, Don. Kimberly Doyle?
Yes, good afternoon. Present as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Laura Jose?
I am present. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Megan Medlin?
I'm here.
Thank you. Nasli Restrepo?
Not yet.
And Ken Santini.
Good afternoon. Present.
Thank you, Ken. Okay, everybody. Thank you again for our first and third meeting of the month for the SB 823 subcommittee. We'll move right down to our ongoing discussion of services and programs that we've been working on over the last couple of weeks here. I just wanted to, before we get started, just for clarity, to make sure that we're, as a subcommittee, we understand our purpose and our role. The last two meetings that we've had has been primarily discussing off of a template with the SB 823 language, what it is that we need to come up with for the county, ultimately, which would be a plan for the County of Orange. That we have eight areas that we have been and will continue to discuss, actually eight different parts. Part one is the subcommittee composition, which all of you are a part of. Thank you. Part two is identifying our target population. Three is program and services. Four is juvenile justice realignment, block grant funds, what we'll use, make sure we use the funds for the particular areas. Five is a facility plan. Six is retaining the target population in the juvenile justice system. And part seven is regional efforts, if there will be any regional efforts by the county identified. And lastly, but most importantly, the data that we would be collecting. And just making sure that the committee understands that the last couple of meetings and maybe a few meetings forward will be continued discussions that we will have of these sections, and that we will need to agendize to move us forward to actually put the plan together, which all of you are bringing information. We're having discussions that will be part of the plan that we will need to get posted. But I want to make sure that everybody in the committee understands that. This part has been multiple conversations and discussions, which I appreciate. I know myself and Judge Modake just talked with Dr. Kaufman from UCI, just some things to keep in mind with our programming. I know, Don, you brought up some discussions with programs, and then our community members, Steve and Raymond, as well as Megan and Nasli, I see you there, bringing up some of our community input that we'll want for our plan. So, again, the plan it will be forthcoming in our future meetings that we will actually sit down and put together as a committee. I'm really hoping here and believing, as I'm watching the county overall and just the state, that if not our next meeting, all future meetings will be able to be in person, which will help, I know me personally, greatly to be in person as we put together. But I just want to, again, just go through and see if there were any updates, or more importantly, any concerns that the committee may have, or understandings of where we are today with the committee and some of the next steps that we'll have. Is there anything that I can clear up to the best of my ability for you? Okay. Again, just making sure that the committee understands that with this plan that we are talking about a variety of different areas. I want to talk a little bit about the facilities near the end of our meeting, kind of what's been happening with related to our facilities, actual facilities. When Judge Motoriki and I just talked with Dr. Kaufman, I have no doubt most of you will have heard or understand some of the descriptors when it comes to the importance of programming. And a word I heard today, which was so important, is understanding that the program we offer the youth we have that is developmentally informed with a developmental approach, meaning that how you address a 15, 16-year-old developmentally, our outcome is the same. It may be a life skill, it may be a CBT that we're working with, but ultimately how you approach that and set up that programming for that individual is so important that is developmentally informed. Just a term, I don't use it enough, but I understand clearly the importance of, as we move forward and talking about our different programs forward. As I mentioned, our next meeting won't be till July 1st. We'll probably have that one as a virtual meeting too, but I'm gonna look to see if we can get us in person here. Because as we start figuring out and really putting a plan together to address the specific 8 target areas for the plan, I think it does help in being in person, and we'll be able to work through that. So just want to make sure the committee is on the same page with the chair here, the best that you can. If you have any concerns, this would be a good time to discuss that. If not, backing up from our June 3rd meeting, we were on, went through each area, and I really just kind of wanted to do the same today to see if there was more information on the specific area, starting with our targeted population. We were talking about the profile of the youth. I believe Judge Marike brought up being open to making sure we have a broader view of the youth we have, not just the youth that are currently committed to DJJ, but making sure we develop, as we move forward to develop this plan, that it understands and addresses all of the youth that could fall into the eligibility of this targeted population. In talking with Judge Marike, there's still ongoing discussions to understand what makes a youth eligible for the Secure Track program. And we will continue to update the committee as we work through that. But generally, I think we can talk forward on what type of other areas we would want to make sure we included in this future plan on the profile of the youth. Obviously, the anticipated population we serve, we can base upon those that we have now and those that we've served, get our age range, male and female. Another piece that I've seen through some other different plans has been understanding if a youth had already or previously received prior intervention or services from the probation department or possibly social services. I think that would be key. Not all youth, I think, that fall into the potential 823 realigned youth. Some of them may be a first-time offense that gets them there, but many have maybe received prior intervention or services. And I think it would be something for the committee to keep in mind as we look and identify needed programs or current programs we have, making sure if that youth went through that program, was there something missing in that program that didn't connect with that youth? Or do they just need to hear it this time? You know, the first couple of times they didn't hear it. I'm not sure at this point, but I think that's a key point. We also talked about the geographical areas. I think that was NASLE, understanding where's the concentration of the youth coming from the county. Not only making sure that we have the right programming within the identified program within our facilities, but making sure in the communities too. It'd make no sense to have a program available for a youth that they couldn't get to that program or have that accessibility to that program. So with the target population, Daniel, I see you waving at me. Either waving at me or you'd like to say something. And I know we did, Daniel, I did ask you about some further information. So.
Yeah.
The floor is yours, Daniel, please.
Yeah, so I have several of those items on my homework list. I've made some progress on those. I just received some information from DJJ on our current folks a couple of days ago. And so I think, and I'm waiting for some other information to come in. So I think I'm going to be able to have what I was going to provide on those points possibly for the next meeting, kind of give a profile of the current potential population. Again, folks who might fall into this category based on offense and other things, as, in addition to our actual DJJ population. So maybe we can kind of get a potential profile, and then looking at those zip codes and So I'm pretty sure I'll be able to have that together for the next one. So, and then if anyone else had any other was going to work on anything in addition to those kinds of things that we probably have either in our case management system or, like I said, I'm getting from DJJ, by all means, I don't know if the attorneys would have additional input to provide, but those are the things that I think I can continue together.
So when we're talking, Daniel, if I could just ask, we're talking geographical. Kim, as well as Laura, you're going to have the same information about where their address is and where they live. I don't know if that would be much different from your two aspects, but what I would probably ask is just to get the experience from Steve and Raymond and Nasley and Megan and Don yourself, when you have programs within the community, and maybe this might be a question, how do you guys set up ensuring that accessibility for a population can be best served? I don't know if I asked that correctly, but yeah, I'm just trying to say, I mean, generally we're gonna probably say Santa Ana probably has a high concentration of the youth we will serve. But there could be other cities too, but let's just use Santa Ana. Are you aware, Don, is there a system that uses how you identify where program either the need is or where they would be located within the community, or anybody that would have the answer? I see Don. Don's my center square, so I'm going right to Don.
Well, thank you. So I think that for our regional clinics, those are geographically located. We have 24 locations throughout the county. And they were, there are certain expectations that the state has for us to have resources within a certain geographic zone. And it's called network, I'm blanking on what it's called right now. It's network adequacy. And so we have to demonstrate that we have a certain number of providers in certain locations within a certain geographic region for the numbers of individuals that might need services. So that's one way that we do that. But a lot of our services also are field-based. So for our FSP providers, for example, they may have an office in Orange, but they may serve people wherever that need is. So they're not really restricted geographically because they're able to deliver the services in the community where the youth are. So those are a couple. I hope that answers your question. Yeah. Those are a couple of ways that we look at it.
So I think, Don, you brought up a great point, and I said accessibility, that network adequacy, whichever, it's just the ability for that individual to get that service. It doesn't always mean that they go to the service, but the service that could
it's happen. Available.
Yeah.
It's available.
Okay. I mentioned zip codes when I was talking about geographical data. That's something that we tend to rely on. It's something that's easily accessible. We have other reports that also break down by zip code, and personally, I like zip code because even in a high-density city like Santa Ana, two different zip codes can be vastly different. And also, when we're talking about using public transportation and things like that, zip code is a little bit smaller than, county region or something that could be larger geographically. Is that for our community folks? Would zip code be helpful, or is there a better measure of geography?
Yeah, I think for the narrower the better, especially, because that's when we start seeing the disparities. So we use a lot of conditions in Children's Report, which I'm sure you guys are all familiar with that. I love those geographic maps, and it tells me all the hot spots that I'm concentrated in with kids on probation, dropout rates, all of them. When they do it geographically and then as well as narrated down by race and ethnicity, even better, because I'm able to see where is the highest concentration, and that's where I would send, or that's where I would make sure, right, that I would have, at least it's an identified gap that as a community we need to know that that's where I would, go and provide services to. And definitely in the field is I would say ideal. I know that when we have our experience working with youth reentering back into the community, our modality was to go into the field, because even though we were situated Santa Ana, and that was the highest, unfortunately, it's still one of the highest rates of disproportionality. We still have a hard time having them come to our offices as well, which I'm sure, Dawn, you have the same situation. But being in the field, I know social services does that a lot, the public health does that. I just feel that it was a really great, successful implementation when we were out in the field. But again, those are high resources there, but it seemed to work, especially with this population, the most.
Nasley, can I ask when you talk about, or Don, if you said to like a field access, so I have to honestly say I roughly have an idea what that would mean, but that would mean just whatever the service is identified, and would you have it at a park, or are you trying to go into somebody's home?
Anywhere.
Okay.
For
you're,
us,
you're going to meet the person where they're at.
Where they're at. So they may want to meet at home, they want to meet at a library, they may want to meet at Starbucks. So our staff meet with them where they are comfortable meeting with us. And if they're comfortable at their home, then that's what we do. Sometimes homes are not private. If you have multiple families living in a residence, or you have, you know, little siblings or things like that, that may not be the best place to meet with people. It's good to get the lay of the land and see what's going on in somebody's home environment, but they may not feel that they have privacy in order to meet with you there. And so we take all of those factors into consideration.
Okay. And I think the key thing, too, is, you know, I'm looking over the rooftop of our probation office. Hasn't been open for a while, but eventually it will be. But again, I'm going to imagine the reaction of somebody coming in, one of our adult or juvenile clients coming in the office, may be completely different to either their openness or their responses to what's going on, as opposed to going into the environment within, you know, in a public setting that's they're comfortable, their home, as we mentioned. So, you know, that's something, the basic work of a probation officer, too. Again, as much as we can get probation officers into the community where people are, meeting people where they're at is a major driver. So, okay. So just continuing on the target population. Again, we have a descriptor that comes from the Welfare and Institution Code, but there were some other things that were brought up from our previous meeting, also talking about similar underlying issues that a youth may have, or factors that are impacting youth, and I don't remember who said that. It might have been Nasley. But if there's other things that we need to consider in that profile of the youth, there's common ones that we're going to talk about. There could be medical, there could be substance use, there could be those things. But are there other areas that we may want to look to see if we can extract from some data point that talks about other underlying issues or factors that impact youth? I mean, sometimes just where they live, there could be the impact in the community of where they live. I don't know how you quantify that and say that, but might be something. Okay, so Daniel, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I think, you know, one of the things that I come to learn, obviously, in working in this field is that many of them are also in social service or have a history, so having understanding of if how many are, you know, are serving in both systems. I think sometimes we don't know that, and we're not holding hands enough to see how many are actually have, you know, have been in the system under, you know, a car report or something like that, and vice versa, that they're also have a juvenile crime. And
I think that system involved, I mean, we obviously, Nasley, bring up a great point, we have youth across both systems, but that would again just build a stronger case of what this youth has been up against. The social service, they might be at such a young age that they're not even aware what may have been impacts. But we the program, we the service, we the system should understand those things. So, okay, is there anything else then on the target population that I know, Judge? You had, I think we brought up some of the things that you had mentioned. I just want to make sure that I have Daniel or others that can pull that information. Again, as we call that meeting where we, you know, put on the agenda that we are now beginning to build that plan, making sure we have as much information from all of the resources that are on the involved with this committee. So make sure we're not missing something.
I was just going to add, I don't know if it's too far in the weeds, but would it matter if they were special ed status or not? Sometimes that can, if specifically with a learning disability, it's going to impact the way they receive or process information. I don't know, we have that many kids, but I think it could be a factor in how well the kids react to treatment or are available cognitively for treatment.
So,
Lynn, I guess, yeah, that's a really, I'm feeling you just, I was in a fog for a minute there, but I would say a lot of my advocacy that I do with my kids at, you know, at a younger age, right, is helping parents advocate and understand special education. Many of our kids are dealing with learning disabilities, and because of that, they get apathetic with school. So, I mean, I'm already seeing at a, you know, on a prevention end, so I would love to be able to see if we can find that information as well.
I mean, I can get access to that. And I'm thinking more specific disabilities like receptive and expressive language abilities, where a student, you can talk all you want, and if they don't have the ability to process that language, you're spinning your wheels. They're never going to get it. Same thing with expressive language delays. If you're trying to get information out of them and they have that particular disability, they can't express what is in their head or what you need to hear. So I know we're not dealing with a large population, and many of the kids have more diagnoses like attention deficit or they're emotionally disturbed, and we've really got that well covered with mental health, I think. But those kids with very specific processing disorders are going to present a challenge for some of the treatment programs.
So Lynn, if I can ask you, on that piece too, when we start with the youth that comes in, when you build that initial case plan, there are levels of educational assessments, and is that the piece where that would be identified, or would Dawn potentially see that coming on the healthcare side of it, or be more of a, between the two of you, would you meet in the middle with that?
I think we'd probably meet in the middle, because we would have the history on those kids of special education diagnosis or treatment throughout their schooling, even if they are young adults and maybe have graduated high school. There would still be IEPs that we could access if we knew who to request them from.
Okay.
But kids that are in Orange County, I have access to the database and can find IEPs on kids if that's necessary.
And Lynn, you bring up a great point too. It's not just the youth getting their educational needs met, but we gotta make sure we can meet that need to the what you're identifying. So when you look at the initial, we were talking about phases, we can talk about that again, but those initial assessments, how important that educational phase from the beginning, no matter what age they are, but that we're addressing that appropriately, or have to go get that service if it's needed, because if they're not going to, it's more than just education, right? It's everything they're processing, anything we say to them, whatever the community folks that are working with them, anybody that comes under Dawn's folks that work with them, our probation staff when they go to court, with both of their attorneys one side or the other, they're not processing what's taking place there. So I think you touched on bigger than education, but that whole processing piece is a big one.
Well, I just know one of the young men that will probably fit in this target population that's in the hall now has a diagnosis of autism, and that really impacts his ability to process information in the way that we think is typical.
Yeah, there's nothing routine, typical, any of those words to go right off the virtual screen, right? There's no such thing. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm just trying to think of this now, boots on the ground, you know, how this would look, like, Chief, like you were saying, in the case plan. So that's where I'm kind of thinking we would start asking those questions or gathering that information. But then to Steve Kim's previous point about the navigator and things like that, I mean, that's where that person could also make sure those I's are being dotted and things like that. And so our staff or whoever, our transitional person or whatnot, could be seeking that information, Lynn, from your staff or from Department of Ed and from social services, those kinds of things. But also, again, yeah, getting in the weeds down the road, maybe we have, you know, identified points of contact or whatever to compile that information. And then having report reports and things like that.
But it's part of the profile. It's part of a risk factor that, you know, again, when you start looking at income, gender, race, and all of these things, it's a profile of what can we see, what's happening. Do we see a common trend here? That these are the kids who's our profile kid who would have been in juvenile hall.
Use that as another metric.
Exactly. So definitely down for grade. Yeah.
Steve, real quick, just for your, I'm going to mention you, and I did make a note about how important it is to have a community intervention worker and or peer specialist identified on that team from the beginning with them. So I didn't forget about you, Steve. It's just not onto that section yet. But what'd you got, Steve? Go ahead.
Thank you, Chief. I'm going to give you a little Korean heart for that. Thank you. There you go. You know, I actually have all these notes here, and really good to be in good company because I agree with everything that's being said. Yeah, thank you for bringing up the community intervention workers. We're actually seeing really good results with the kids that we're all talking about that have done a lot of time, that have been just as involved with the use of navigators. One other thing that all of you are aware of is we've been trying to create true peer-to-peer support groups for kids who have been incarcerated together to be able to create positive spaces. I feel like that has also a lot of benefit, because we know when they come out, we can provide the resources, but for many reasons, they get drawn in back to the gang because they belong and they feel like the kids they hang out with, you know, give them an identity. And so I think more areas where we can find in the community where there are peer-to-peer supports where they could support each other with similar backgrounds and history of being justice involved, I think has been very helpful. We've been kind of playing with it over the last 2 years, and we're getting really good feedback. So it doesn't have to be just us. There's a lot of great organizations out there, but I think the more that we can find where there are peer-to-peer support with the combination of navigators / mentors, I think with the population we're talking about, I think it will be really good.
Steve, can I ask you real quick, when you talk about peer-to-peer, and I understand that similar backgrounds, do you view that differently than a navigation? Because I'm hearing different ones, but I see there's really, I mean, but it can a community intervention worker do the same, or peer-to-peer support, and then navigation, are they three completely different?
That's a great question, Chief. We realize that even with our lived experience, as cool as our lived community adventure workers are, the added benefit of having kids, you know, that are truly peer-to-peer, I think has been better with the combination of our older folks with the mentors. So they can kind of provide that, I've been there, done that, and I'll walk with you. But some of the kids just want to be with each other who are on the same age group. I mean, Raymond, what do you think? Because you run a lot of those groups for us.
Well, pretty much what you said is right. I think they kind of relate more to each other because their struggles are in the now, not what we went through years back. But with our guidance, they're able to, we could create a good space for them where they could learn off each other.
I would say the same thing too. I mean, we use your YGC KISS to come and give testimony, and that is that's gold for us, for the parents and youth, when they come and share their peers, hearing it from their mouths. Not from their parents' mouths, not this person who's been here, you know. But it's very powerful, and we use that till this day, so I agree.
And I'll just add a piece, too. I also ran a couple of youth presentations for safe schools for teachers, and when you bring youth up there, let them speak from where they see, not what we tell them what they see, but let's let them speak from, and they're safe. You know, you always let them know if you're not comfortable, you don't have to answer, but let these teachers or let these whoever the individuals that are here to help you really understand where you're coming from in an environment that's out in the community, not, you know, sitting in the day room at YGC telling them. You're going to get a different response more likely. So, okay. All right. Did somebody else come up? I looked down. I'm sorry real quick if I missed something. Okay. All right. Well, we can move on to some of the other ones. Again, that's what my hopes is chairing this committee as we go through these different sections that eventually we'll hone them down as a group and agree this is where we need to be. And remember, too, that this initial plan down the road, when we get this put together, is purely the initial plan that stays with us here in the county, that shows the state that we've put a committee together and we're addressing those areas. But it's going to have to be reviewed and revised throughout the time, because we'll put initially what we think will work, and then we're going to have to look at some of those outcomes, and maybe some of them are great. And better than others, we replicate those, and maybe some we missed it. We're fortunate to have a lot of great programs now and building upon those and within our communities. But again, I just want to make sure that all of us know when you put this kind of a plan together, it's an initial start to where we want to be, what we want to identify with, what information all of us here today have. But could definitely change, especially when you get that first youth that goes into Secure Track, and we kind of, I don't want to say pilot, but, you know, it makes it more official where it is and where we're at. So, okay, let me, if the committee's okay with that, I'm just going to move over to talk a little bit more about our programs. Judge Motoriki, before you came on, I did mention that you and I had spoke with Dr. Kaufman, and let me get over to my notes on the program side, but I just wanted to know if you want to give any feedback related to some of the things that Dr. Kaufman had shared with you and I, and I don't think it's going to be earth-shattering to many people in here, but it just reinstates the importance that we stay focused on those areas.
No, thanks, Chief. I think I joined right when you were talking about our meeting and kind of giving a brief synopsis of that meeting. So I think that's perfect. Information's out there.
Okay. And then I just want to make sure on the program services is a couple of you are out looking at different areas. I know, Dawn, we had you going out to look at some different areas. Is there other things that we as a group would ask somebody within the in our committee here that thought about that we can get more information about? If not, I was just going to kind of move us into some of the phase discussions we were having, if that's even the right term, move into that discussion a little bit, see if it generates more. We would plug in more programs. Often you look at a phase of intake and a phase of programming and a phase of transition in the community. That may generate more conversation centered about what some of the needs or what we have. So in looking at, if you looked at an initial phase, and if we agree as a group that the Secure Track program would have phase one, would be an intake case planning. We've talked about assessments, a new one to me, clearly. Lynn, thank you on the educational piece, how important it is not just to check for credits, and I'm not by any means saying that that has to be part of it, but ensuring that special ed piece is involved and engaged, and having the same conversation with Dawn and her folks at the healthcare side, because if we don't start from the beginning really understanding what the youth is capable of processing, understanding, we're just going to be putting a bunch of things in front of them, but not get much accomplished at that point. A question, Dawn, that I had, looking at considering some different areas when you do those initial assessments. I mean, you have your basic health and basic needs, and then there's probably appropriate housing considerations. Another thing I was thinking about was not only internal, but external connections that should start from the beginning, meaning that the youth is going to have from the beginning a level of an interaction, engagement, and relationship with both attorneys, definitely the attorney representing them, but with the staff within the facility, and how important that those connections begin on the right foot to most possible to get success through the phase program. That was just something internally I was looking at. Then externally, you would have your family and support systems, which Steve, you brought up a few of them. How important that those are early on, that they should be engaged and involved and identified. I think back in our system where the probation officer may not get involved, they may write the initial report and then maybe they catch up with the youth near the end of that commitment, but how important it is for them to be in the beginning. Again, so you have, you're being consistent with from day one throughout the programming and supportive, and then they transition to the community and continue to build upon what they've learned or built within themselves and not have to restart it or relearn it. I just want to see if there's any input on that. Just I threw out about 12 different areas to talk about there, but any input?
I don't know if I have anything new to add, Chief Sentman. I think you've covered a lot there just in terms of the things that are important, making sure that you have those connections. I don't know that I would add to it.
Okay.
I'm not thinking, nothing's coming to me to add to that.
Yeah. Again, I've just thrown out some different things. Judge, I'm going to look at you. When you look at, if I remember right in the law, and you can correct me on that, that's why we have you here. If the commitment is that the kid is adjudicated and committed to that program, is it within 30 days that case plan comes before the court, or is that prior to the commitment to Secure Track? So the bench has as much information initially to see if Secure Track is appropriate.
I have to look at that part again, Chief. I don't remember off the top of my head.
I thought it was in the first 30 days that, a case plan would be, not the final case plan, but the initial one, which would have these assessments, which would have some of these basic areas covered for you as the judge to understand really what's before you. You've got the youth, you've got the attorneys representing their interests, but then you have the actual, what are we looking at forward for this?
Right. I know that there's a 30-day time period. I just don't know off the top of my head whether it has to be solidified or whether it's proposed.
Okay. And I don't know, Kim or Laura, you may be aware too. I need to exclude you from that but how important that would be, because it really is a determining factor. And just some of the assessment pieces I'm hearing today and information that would be gleaned from and for the court. Not that that doesn't happen now, but clearly it could go to that next level, which would be important.
Chief, I've got an answer for you. It's 30 days after the commitment, after the date of commitment order. That's okay. When the plan has to be submitted.
Okay, that's the initial plan before the court, so that you can make a maybe a directive that they remain in secure housing for a period of time, or you go less secure.
Correct.
Okay, just something for the committee to keep in mind as we again get closer down the road. We're having our discussions now, but as we get to the planning phase of that, what would need to be included in phase one. Anything else, just thinking of those initial phases as you come in from any of you, even in the community, is there a community need that we should address? I did mention, Steve, talking about whether it's a peer-to-peer navigator or, hold on here, make sure I get all the terms that we're using correctly, the navigation, mentors, or make sure that that individual's involved with the process, because there's stuff that can occur within the facility or within the commitment time that can be transferred into the community, if I know that correctly.
Yeah, you know, Your Honor, I think we've spoken before about the value of CASA, things like that. Would we want this to be something that is ordered, you know, where a peer or a mentor or a navigator is, that may clear the path for access and other kinds of things. I don't know, I'm just brainstorming, thinking out loud. Is that also brings some importance to the pairing of these advocates and things? So I don't know, just thinking. I know we both said, you know, we wish CASA applied to delinquency, you know, so so maybe this is the opportunity.
I'm hoping at least we can start the conversation, right, Daniel, because I know you and I have continued to have it. And we've tried, especially since we received the input from the folks at PK, with respect to the importance and significance of that mentor for some of our youth. So, yeah, I would like to see it as part of a plan. And if we could develop it now, that would be great.
Again, I'm just going to identify that as an internal but an external connection, because not only does that support the youth, but the family support piece or this know, the appropriate support system. It might be an aunt, uncle, it may be an older sibling that's offering that support. But the earlier they're engaged and involved too in developing relationships, not only internally with the program part of it or within our facilities, but just as important in the community. So it's not a stranger when they walk into the NASI, Megan. I try to combine your name, Megan and Medlin, in one word, Steve, or Dawn, in some community program, that there's already a level of understanding roles, but more importantly, some conversation has already occurred to break over that barrier. So.
Okay. Can I ask a question?
Laura.
I don't know if this is appropriate for this piece of the plan, but it's just occurring to me during this conversation of sort of an overarching piece that I know we mentioned at some point, but the idea of like staff training, because when you're talking about making connections with kids, you're also talking about developmentally appropriate programming. You're talking about developmentally appropriate interactions. You're talking about understanding where a kid is at in terms of their educational or deficits that they might have. I think that for all of our agencies, certainly it goes to my staff, it goes to the DA staff, and it goes to, you know, probation staff or any of these navigators or anybody who's touching these kids, that we should all be sort of on the same level playing field about what we're dealing with and how it's the appropriate way to manage, right, these relationships that we have with this clientele. So I don't know how that fits into this particular piece of the plan or if it goes in another piece of the plan, but I think that we're only as good as the people delivering the services. We can talk about appropriate, you know, age appropriate plan, but if the people aren't trained to deliver that, it doesn't mean anything. So that's just something I was thinking of while we were talking about, when you're talking about connections, connections with staff, connections with lawyers, education of, you know, bench officers, all of those things are important.
Well, and I think, Laura, you bring up a great point, because we're fortunate our number may be more manageable. I don't like the word too high or too low, but a manageable number. But looking at some, maybe some initial, like a phase one training for our staff, too. So everybody's not only speaking the same language, but the approach, you made a great point, whether it's representation from yourself or from Kim from the DA's office. But we're all, for the most part, because I think what happens too, the system unintentionally can cause trauma too. And if we're not sensitive to what different things we're trying to do, we may inadvertently, you know, either reopen something or cause war, which I don't think we can totally prevent that from happening, but we need to put our best foot forward. And it's just consistency. If we're looking, you know, one of the conversations with Dr. Kaufman is our whole system moving from the punishment system, which a lot of these youth understand punishment. They may have been living a life of punishment, which causes the trauma. But how important the accountability piece, which you eventually should get the same result from, is that accountability, not only with the system holding accountable, the building the capacity within these youth to hold themselves accountable. But that means the system has to hold themselves accountable. Or I'm trying, in a roundabout way, trying to get to where you're at there, is that if we function as a system that's accountable to itself too, and accountability is just training and speaking the same language and being exposed to some of the same things so that we're being consistent the best we can, not taking away our own discretion in how we do things, but being consistent in the manner that we address youth with help. So I think that's what you're saying about training, Laura. I might have just put too many words in there.
No, that's what I'm, yeah. Okay. We're all sort of coming from the same, if we all have the same training, well, not the same training, because different units would need different types of training, potentially. Yeah. But as you said, an overarching sort of understanding of the mission and the values and also just a practical, I mean, we can talk about it in the abstract, but how it's like, positive parenting, you know, we all have heard about positive parenting, but go ahead and try that when your four-year-old's having a meltdown, right? So I think that there needs to be a training component in that, right? It's not just this is what we want to do, it's practice and reinforcement, right, by everybody in the system.
And again, I could tell you, if we just say we identified a team of us, just everybody's on this call, and you go listen to Dr. Kaufman for a period of time, we'll get an understanding and be on the same page. She's just one example, and a recent example, just within an hour or two ago. But an example of, we all hear it. Now, Laura, you would apply it differently, maybe different than Ken would or Lynn would, but we're still hearing it from the source of what the outcome we're looking for, to your point. So, okay, thank you.
I think there's a capacity of staff that needs to be a quality assurance, if you will, of how we ensure that it's culturally appropriate. And that's a daily. I mean, I know in my profession, I'm constantly doing group supervision and having the ability to debrief my cases with my supervisor. And that's very common in the human helping profession. And so I'm not quite sure if that's happening on a probation level. Again, kind of going back to, we'll get now to the who's going to actually be doing this work. And if it's this, you know, a broad system, there's a broad system of increasing capacity of understanding adolescent development. But how do we approach that? How do we implement that intervention? And that's staff capacity is what I'm hearing. The training that needs to be ongoing. And also, how do you, you know, like point laid out, you know, you've been trained on how to do positive parenting, but when you're in that moment, you get triggered. And so as staff, we get triggered. How do you take care of ourselves so we don't, you know, traumatize our own, you know, clients? So what is that staff capacity and how are we approaching that when we're working with clients? And I think that's the level of training that should be ongoing. If it's not already happening, I don't know. So that's a question to go back.
One of the things, Nazi, to jump in there, we learned early on that for navigators, just because somebody has lived experience, they're not always ready to jump in to become a navigator. And so we jumped on the bandwagon of what LA County did for numerous years before community and venture workers got kind of highlighted these days. They had certificate trainings, and so I know one thing that was helpful is four or five years ago, we connected with the USC School of Social Work, and we created a 16-week community intervention worker certificate program. And that was really helpful. It helped learn about developmental thing, helped learn about mental health, crisis intervention, street intervention, on and on. But I think too, so that's one. So we try to really have our people certificated somewhere. The second thing is what you're saying, Nazlee, is that we did experience over the years on the ongoing support needed for secondary trauma. Also things like professionalism, understanding how to navigate systems. And so the organization, I think, have to have that ongoing component of providing support and training. And so right now, I know for us, we're doing a trauma and recovery certificate program training with Cal State Fullerton. And so the reason why I mentioned that is I'm having the academic institutions buy in, and their approval on the curriculum has helped standardize the information that's going out, along with approving the instructors. And so I totally agree with you, Laura, that I think it is important to have some type of certificate or training or some type of training for everybody, and also for navigators who do this work as well.
And that actually would move up prior to the phase stage. But again, going back to phase two and talking about some of the in-custody programming, all these conversations go along with that. The thing that really stands out to me, and I think we'll do well with that because we're willing to work as a team, but how important is, and somebody just said it earlier, is it's not an individual approach, although specific need of that youth may be an individual approach we need to have, but our unified approach or agreed upon approach towards these youth will be really very key in their success too. I mean, sometimes I can think back and talking to, and even happens with staff, that if there's inconsistencies in how things are approached or addressed or worked with, that causes confusion amongst them too. But we got to make sure our staff are on the right page with that too. So again, we looked at phase one intake and case planning, phase two, programming we'll continue to have. Is there anything on the programming side that we may have missed and talked about it? I mean, clearly there's the obvious ones, the clinical treatment needs, the ability to do some stabilization factors with youth, focusing on mental health and substance use. Is there other things on the programming side? I know we can get and hours of talking about that, but I just want to make sure. Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
Just for the rest of the group, Steve and Brian and I were kind of struggling after the last meeting in this online format. You know, like Steve's mentioned, you know, it'd be much better in person. But in trying to do this, you know, piecing together of a working document publicly, right, so that anything that we're adding is before the meeting. I mean, is part of the meeting. When it comes to things like programs, we're having a lot of good discussion. There have been some emails offline. I know Ben had sent a large amount of input regarding education, things like that. And we had previously posted publicly on a previous agenda the probation staff suggestions. So I just wanted to throw out there that maybe, especially when we're talking about programs, and also with all the input that we've received today, trying to do this publicly and trying to do this all on this kind of working document, would it be helpful to insert all of the feedback to this point into the template under the appropriate sections, and then have that to work off of? Again, so it's public, it's and because we're throwing these ideas out, we can put them all on in the template and then start picking them apart, and maybe, you know, start putting names to specific names to programs we might want to explore, maybe take some things out, you know. But it's very, for us anyway, it was difficult to visualize how are we actually going to piece together this plan publicly as if we were all working around a table and everyone could see what we're doing. So I just wanted to volunteer that maybe for the next meeting, so we can then have that to look at, and then or post it or put it in the chat or somewhere that is public and meets the requirements.
I think, I'll speak for myself, I think it would be helpful to have information that we can look at. I tend to be a little bit more visual, so we shared a lot of information last time. But the agenda that we have, the information isn't in the template, so it's difficult to know, you know, what have we sort of solidified around and what have we not. And then also just for my own information, because I'm still learning about this type of meeting format. And in other groups, when we are trying to put together things like this, there are often work groups or subcommittees for specific segments of reports, and they work on it, and then they bring something back and they present it in a more public way. We're not doing that with this. And I guess I had a question about the necessity to do it in the format that we're doing it in. I know we need to or we wouldn't be doing it, but I guess I have a question about why it's that way for this meeting when it isn't that way for other meetings that are also public.
And Don, and Daniel both, thank you both for that, is that I too, and Daniel mentioned it for me, but struggling with it, and as you chair the meeting and, you know, with a template, I'm wondering, Don, if what Daniel suggested, and we're not too far off from that, because I've got multiple pads of papers trying to restate some of the things we brought, but to your point, Don, is visually for everybody to be able to see it, to continue to build upon and talk upon it, that our next meeting, that we would have the template with more of some fill-ins that at least worth the discussion, so we can start making some agreements that, yes, at intake, we'll have case planning and assessments. We all agree with that. We all are good with that. And that right now, the plan starts to start building itself. Because it's sitting before us.
Possibly with Jamie's input, I mean, we could also, I think, Don, to what you're saying, we could create an ad hoc, and maybe that template is compiled by a few people behind the scenes, and then it is then produced for the rest of the group to view. Is that correct, Jamie?
Correct. Sorry, I didn't unmute myself. Yeah, we just want to make sure we don't have a quorum, which would be six people, so less than that. So just a few people would be fine.
Okay. So if you look back to the sections, just if the section we're looking at now, program and services, if we had, let's just say, Daniel, Don, and Steve, Kim, if you were, we have kind of some headline areas, and you would identify these different program type areas that's been brought to the group forward, and then we can all, is that, so I'm understanding that correctly?
Was that a question for Jamie?
Yeah, that might have been whoever wanted to take it, but Jamie, yes, would that work?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
And Chief, I mean, if we're on that, I don't have a problem with that section. I know, because it's a lot for you to take on, basically, as a chair. So we could do it that way, and I don't have a problem taking that on based on the discussion that you and I had with Dr. Kaufman, and then just drafting some language as well as taking the input that everybody else has had, and a couple of other people from this committee, if they don't mind working with me on that, I don't have a problem drafting that and then bringing it back before the subcommittee.
Okay, so let's do this. Let's back this up then, because does the committee feel on the target population that we're in a pretty good place with that part? We don't need a subcommittee. The program is the biggest piece. It really is. When you really, I'm looking at it, and we sit here talking about it here. So what if we started with, and thank you, Judge, for that input and willingness, start with creating a subcommittee for the programs and services it's part three of that template, but it really would address the phase, everything we've been talking about for the last 40 minutes here or so, a half hour or so. Because if you looked at the phase, when we talked to them last meeting, we agreed that there's a phase program. And I think Daniel, in that initial document that was put out too, that had a phase program. That would allow programs to be applied to those phases, if I'm understanding that correctly.
Okay.
So with that, I would ask then Judge Motorike and Daniel if you would both co-chair that, and if I can get at least one of our community people, and Don, you're kind of our specialist here in the county, would you be agreeable to that?
Sure.
Okay, so we've got Judge Marike and Daniel will be the co-chairs, and we're going to have Dawn. And I got you nodding your head, yes, Steve? Okay. And Nazlee, would you like to be involved, or Lynn? Hey, education's a big piece, Lynn.
Yeah, I'd probably like to be involved since I don't have a lot of input on the other areas. That's probably the big one that I would be involved in.
Okay. Okay, Jamie, so we good on that?
Yes, I have a Judge, and I have Daniel, and Dawn, Steve, Kim, and Lynn.
And then what we'll ask you folks to do is in part three of the programs and services, it basically says provide a description of facilities, programs, placements, services, service providers. The piece that I will eliminate from your work group is a facility piece. That falls with probation, and we've kind of have a plan that's moving forward with that, but it would be the programs and services and service providers that would cover that, Daniel? That were you?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. We have to mute that phone.
From the facility standpoint, like what unit we use or how we staff it or whatever. Yeah, those kinds of things will be our decision.
Okay. Okay, is the committee all fine with that? Laura, did you want to... The legal side of that, I agree. I got you, but you're good with it? Okay, Kim? Let's see where Kim's at. Okay, Kim, thank you for the thumbs up on that. Okay, thank you for that. Because again, I'm used to doing these things in person. Virtually has been difficult. And my desire for the committee, July 1st is just around the corner, but maybe that last meeting in July, not the first one in August, where we'll start putting pieces of this plan forward after the discussions, and because we do need to get, we're under a somewhat of a time frame with it, and when you think about summer, it wraps up quickly, and then September, if not October, we do need to have this plan. It does have to go before the Board of Supervisors, and then there's also has to be some level of work with the CEO's office, and we want to make sure that we at least have the substance of what this committee sees forward for the plan. Say that for us. So. Okay, let me just look on the programming. Okay, anything else then on that? I was going to touch a little bit on some facilities, kind of some updates, and where the plan is. Probation, along with the county, is working on some facilities, and remembering with this plan that the secure track for realignment youth, the facility needs basically have to have a secure, less secure, and least secure meet the needs of a youth. And the county has been working on a plan of integrated services, which now has been brought into the term of OC Cares, justice reform through prevention and intervention. And what we'll need to do and what we have been doing is probation's plan and working with us existing facilities to move us forward and to we have some initial conversations and some action items that have taken place where we've had some tours. Judge Motoike has been on the tour. Daniel's been on the tour. Myself and Assistant Chief Prieto will be on a tour of San Diego's to envision a campus type setting at our and I'll just say juvenile hall, but it's not juvenile hall, just its facility, but create a, to be able to meet the needs of all of our youth with facilities using the existing footprint of our juvenile hall. Now, we currently, as you're aware, we have our juvenile hall with many living units that are not occupied. We have the Youth Leadership Academy, which is separate, although on the same property and across the riverbed is the Youth Guidance Center. And through the integration, our integrated services plan, it's been identified and that the county is making a commitment to move forward with re-envisioning. Some people say reimagine, I'm just going to use re-envisioning, how we use our, I believe it's 17 acres of property to address the youth that we have forward. And in that discussion comes SB 823. Because there will be a time where we'll need to identify the secure location, a less secure location, and obviously a least secure location. And at this point, we're intending to do that through renovation and new construction and some renaming of the facilities we have. For example, I will tell you statewide, a lot of counties are moving away of even calling their juvenile halls. They're calling them juvenile justice centers, juvenile service centers, just something that, although the same services are being provided, there is doing some renaming. Also, that the Youth Guidance Center has been identified as a future use for an adult reentry facility, which would also handle potentially transitional age youth, with a desire to reconstruct a youth transition center, for lack of a better word, on our juvenile hall property. So we would have the ability to provide that level of services in a new type of setting. A new setting meaning new buildings, not just just putting kids into another living unit and calling it that, but actually doing what's been taking place in San Diego County with their, and Judge, help me, I think it's called YTC, is it Youth Transition Campus?
Okay. Very Juvenile Justice Campus.
Yeah. And thank you, Judge, I appreciate you going there and seeing that, because it's one of those things where I know for myself, visually, we need to see it too, and I think we'll be very capable to do it. More importantly, our county and our Board of Supervisors is in agreement of that need too, and now we just need to continue our work with Public Works and all of those involved in the system. But I want to make sure the group understands that less secure or least secure type setting environment, or what we may potentially want to call the Youth Transition Center, that we will be able to secure that, not the word secure, but have that available for our youth, yeah, I would say in the near future here as we move forward. And Judge, you've already had the tour, and I would just ask you your initial, your initial action when you saw that, to what that, because for me, I have to go see it too. I can see somebody draw something on a piece of paper for me, but I need to go see it to really understand. One thing I know, accessibility to any type of service and facilities is always key. And for those on the call that are not aware, this fall we will have our MRC, which is our multi-purpose rehabilitation center, will be kind of the hub within our juvenile hall property, where we have visiting and programming opportunities for youth. And we're looking to build off of that for all of these other needs, which includes a need for just youth services center, which we can address our transitional age, but CSEC youth and some hard to place youth. So we have this initial plan, and for this group, SB 823 part of it, we're looking for, identifying, Daniel, as you had mentioned, okay, the secure portion, clearly we have a couple of living units at our juvenile hall that can provide the secure portion of that, but what those needs would be. And then maybe we look at what would our less secure, still secure, but less compared to the juvenile hall setting, that transitional piece will be so key as we look to move a youth and young adults back out into the community, but still may need some level of service with the county. So with that, Daniel, I know that you had mentioned facilities will be part of that program discussion as well as yourself, Judge. But I just wanted to make the group aware. A lot of it, it's more than just discussion and concept. It continues to move forward, and we're fortunate to have a neighboring county that's there too. As I'm talking with Daniel, I think we may even be farther along, and we haven't even put potentially a shovel into the ground of what we'll be able to create for the youth forward. And I don't know if you, either of you that have been on the tour or something that you saw or that would definitely meet the needs that we will have today and into the future for that.
I actually think that myself, I know Kim Doyle and Laura, okay. We all went earlier in December, and then just the amount of work that had been done since December until now when we went back out again, and Dawn was able to join us as well as you said, Daniel, and then some other folks from Public Works, the A&E firm, and from the county. So, it's just an amazing location facility. The down to the paint colors, the tile, the I always say the al fresco dining, the cafeteria style, the co-location of services. It's a beautiful campus. They put a lot of thought into it. I mean, you know, vaulted ceilings, beautiful design. And so I don't know if anybody else wants to join in, but I really think it is looking to the future of how we really need to be mindful of the spaces for our young kids who are entering the system. So I continue to be impressed by it. I think there's a lot of thought. I mean, they put a lot of thought into every single piece of that property and best practices. So I don't know, Kim, Don, or Laura, Daniel, if you want to chime in as to what your thoughts were.
I can share. I thought walking through, it was refreshing and kind of exciting to see the enthusiasm for shifting the culture around how they're using language even in the program. And that to me is really important because our words convey a lot to the youth that we're working with. And so I think it showed the level of thought that they put into the whole project and what they're hoping to accomplish. And I thought that was really exciting. And I think also some of the things you were referencing just in terms of the colors and the thoughtfulness into making it not look like a very institutional setting, I think is important, because what we're wanting to move away from is this institutionalization. And so having it be more home-like and more cottage-like, I think really has a lot of benefit. So that was what I took away from it, that I was really excited to see.
And I can just say, too, like going on what Don said, the one thing that I took away from it is, you know, one of our main goals is reentry and making sure that our services and our programs really focus towards the reentry of our youth back into society. The one thing they kept saying over and over was, we make sure that every step that we put in this facility, that our youth will make decisions, that they will have decisions to make. And I thought that that was something that was so important for the reentry of our youth. All the way down to they do their own laundry. They have a decision as to what they're going to wear, and they get a decision on what they're going to wear, what they're going to eat, and in some ways what their programming will be once they go into the step-down services. So I thought that was really important, and I know that we have some of that in juvenile hall, but they've thought it to the 10th degree on what these youth can do and how they can make decisions, which I think is another step into a successful reentry back into our society.
You know what, Kim, you bring up a great point, is we expect these youth, when they get out, to make those decisions you made, from simple as, you know, doing your laundry and what you're going to wear. But the only way to do that is to build that capacity within them in an environment, and that's going to take a new facility for to do that. For those of us that have been around for a while, and I have been, Our initial part of our juvenile hall was built in the early 50s in brick and mortar in a linear type of setting, which is not conducive to anything we're trying to accomplish, but it does keep youth safe and secure, but the rest of it's very difficult on what we can do then. And then you move into the 60s and 70s part, again, linear, and not a lot of room for us to do what we need to do. That also includes our youth guidance center, but I believe what we'll be able to do forward is even our youth guidance center needs a level of work of what we're trying to do for youth. And I think what we're fortunate with San Diego being so close, the populations being so same, it's not, we're gonna have to recreate it. I mean, we will recreate it, we're just not gonna have to sit down from the drawing board and figure out what it is. They have a lot of the things I'm talking with Daniel in place that we could replicate and potentially even do better. There's no time like when you get and working closely with the CEO's office and get your board support. There's going to need to be that investment for those resources for our juvenile hall. I've been around long enough to know how many coats of paint we continue to put on different things, and it doesn't change. Don, to your point about the culture too, you put staff in that environment, you're probably not as hard pressed trying to move into this programming phase or this transition phase for you when you're in a visible environment that is conducive to allowing you to do that. So I know on the 29th, I believe it is, myself, Assistant Chief Brent Pareto, We're going to have some more staff we're going to go out and take a look to. And then I will continue to push that in working with the CEO's office and the board to get us there. But we're just going to need to be patient on one thing is, well, the fortunate part is the multi-purpose center was built with state money, and that took a lot of time and efforts and energy. This can be done here within the county. And as I watched the county built up two hall administrations rather quickly, I would look that we can be able to do the same thing over on that juvenile hall campus property. And again, I mentioned talking about even renaming something that we're going to talk about in our department. Just the terms of, you know, the Juvenile Justice Center. Now, Judge Lamoureux's name up there, and it does say Juvenile Justice Center out front, but is that more appropriate to refer the juvenile hall side of what we do? And then that whole transition piece, too, ensuring that, and I'm not an architect by, or a construction person, but it's clearly apparent, as what I understand San Diego, that they can put that, those type of housing and that type of environment on an existing area and make it its own facility at this point. And so when the working group talks there, I'm glad most of you on that working group have been on the different tours, but as we talk about that facility plan, I think we're pretty good on the secure piece, and even there we can improve and enhance what we do, but it's going to be real key on that transition piece, what we have, to make sure that structurally that's capable of doing what we need to do related to that. So on our July 1st meeting, I'll have some more some input. I know myself and Brian, what we saw out there. I thank you, Judge, and Kim, and Laura, did you go out there too? Thank you for going out there. Because I even look at your role, Kim, as well as Laura's, and as you're working with these youth that are going through the court process, the description or the programs and the facilities that they will be in may or may not assist in what you're doing in your aspect of it. You just say juvenile hall, they probably have in their mind what juvenile hall is or isn't. But if you say, you know, eventually you'll work your way to the Youth Transition Center, and this is what offers you, I think we get a better outcome overall. Okay, anything else with the committee then on the facility piece? I just want to make sure, I'm not trying to be mindful and watch the time.
I just a clarification, just for my own knowledge. I know that is some of this improvements or the direction you guys are going to, because based on some of the assessments, because I know that we had done like a JDI assessment, we got to some model sites. Sounds very, very similar to the facilities that I toured when I was in Chicago and Oregon during that time. I know Daniel was with me during that time. I'm not sure anyone else, but is that the direction that I'm hearing your guys are going towards? And
So what San Diego did, it actually on the ground, our program manager is actually a community advocate who kind of led and coordinated the entire project, and they spent 2 years in the planning process. And I don't know if we need to spend 2 years, maybe we'll stand on their shoulders with what they did, but during those 2 years they held community forums, they traveled all over the country, visited from the Missouri model to Georgetown, to a variety of other facilities, to kind of see what they liked and what they didn't like. And you can see over the years, you know, how things have gotten better or worse, and they kind of picked the best of everything they saw. So, so in that sense, it is very JDI, you know, related. And my impression, the kind of what Steve was referring to, where I think we're starting from a better place, is we probably have double the real estate that they're dealing with there. They don't have an open field. They don't have baseball diamonds or anything like that like we have. So we have, you know, a lot of space to work with. And we also have some newer buildings that we can salvage or repurpose or use differently, that we don't have to start from ground zero. But yeah, it was truly the living units that impressed me the most, that are the most drastic divergence from what we're used to. They are going from literally a facility entirely that looks like our oldest rundown units to this state-of-the-art best practices model. So that's why it is a bigger leap for them, because, you know, again, we have some newer, nicer units right now. But also the integration of the collaborative services. They have their therapists on site and, you know, based in units with the youth. But just the living unit design is what's most impressive. And the campus-like feel of the entire layout of the facility is, very college, campus-looking. Also, the complete and deliberate lack of razor wire. We've had to add razor wire in recent years, so because of our low roofs and things like that. So, but there, everything's kind of like the vaulted ceilings, high roofs, using block walls instead of chain link fence and razor wire. It just really lightens the tone, and just really changes the mood when you walk in there. So that was what was most impressive.
Also, too, when I look over the years, we have been fortunate to have done multiple internal programming and training staff and offering different programmings. And as I said, putting different color paints on things. But when we have an opportunity to actually newly construct needed facilities and or renovate, just want to make sure, as I say, the carpe diem and seize that opportunity for the future of what we'll need. I was actually started at Juvenile Hall before Lamoureux Center was there, and the front door was, for those who've been to Juvenile Hall, was the glass doors that you walk through. So it's exciting, especially when you put something like SB 823 alongside it, because clearly that's an area that's going to be so important. Again, the secure, the safety piece of it, we're very good at, but that transition piece takes a building, too, to provide that environment for us, the system, for us in probation, to be able to have our collaboratives come in and work hand in hand with us. I'm just looking forward to that. And I think those that have already done the tours and assisted with that, and it'll be rest upon my shoulders here on the probation side, along with Brian and Daniel, as we continue to get where we're at. And as Daniel said, fortunately, we've got other buildings that we can work with. But we have that property that's available, and the ability to construct maybe even more than what they have there, as I understand. I haven't seen it, but when I go out there, I'll look to be able to see that. So, just the other sections, just real quick. Part six was retaining the target population, and it really talks about how do we ensure that these youth can remain in this secure track type programming. And I look at everything we've talked about over the last period of time here, the last hour or so, hour and a half, is all the success that we're looking to build into this program, including facilities. I would hope that offers the opportunity for our bench officers to see that is the appropriate place to go, and maybe some of these youth would not have to go into the adult system. But that's really, you have to do some of this upfront work before that piece can happen. And then the last... Go ahead, Danny.
Fall into retaining could be, preventing, absconding jurisdiction kind of stuff. So that gets to the engagement and continue their involvement in whatever programs or services or community resources that they are engaged in. And even once they fall off, maybe how to get them back. In maybe the most appropriate fashion, least restrictive fashion. If they're coming back after slipping back into substance use or whatever, maybe there's ways to get them back into treatment, things like that, collaboratively. Try to avoid warrants and those kinds of things.
And then just real quickly, and then I know I've got. Going to ask for public comments to me somewhere. That is the regional efforts. And right now, again, I think we're fortunate in this county we'll be able to address a higher percentage of the population we have. And I think initially, as we work on the plan, that we should always be open to understanding if there is a regional type of program that would better serve a youth that we don't have, that we would be open to that. And I think that's what they're asking for in that statewide plan, is just to understand. And fortunately, we have great relationships from Santa Barbara County all the way on down to San Diego and out to the east of us, if that's needed. And then the data portion will be a part we'll need to continue to work on. And when I heard Dr. Kaufman talking about it, it's not just the completion of a program to show success, but how important it is to take all the steps along the way and to see the change in attitude and behavior along the way and to celebrate those successes as part of the data points too, part of the data collection. And build success. If you're celebrating success in a young person early on, not just to see if you complete the program, that'll be part of it, but you're meeting the different milestones along the way in the program, that's just as important for many of the youth we have. So it's probably more than I thought we'd get accomplished today, so I appreciate what we've been discussing and the establishment of a working group as the program and services is such a big piece. Is there anything further from the committee, and then I'll ask for public comments on item number two. Okay. Jamie, you want to ask for public comments on item number two?
Sure. If anybody wishes to speak, we do have three attendees. If you can hit star 9 on your phone or the hand raise icon on the Zoom app. No requests.
Okay, thank you. And then item number three, and I'm going to redo the agenda for our next meeting, is discussion of subcommittee member group reports. We'll leave that there as we just created a subcommittee. So we'll have a report for there. And I will, at this time, remind all of us our next meeting will be July 1st at 2 p.m. That will be virtually at this time, but I am keeping a close eye on the county where we're at to get us in person when possible, but we'll have July 1st. And there's no further comments. That'll be it for today.
You do need to call for general public comments.
Oh.
Okay, that is,
any
that is on the agenda.
Comments before I adjourn.
Yeah.
I didn't say adjourn yet, Jamie.
No, that
before
you
I
did
adjourn,
not.
Any
general public comments regarding any items not on the agenda, if you can hit star 9 or the hand raise icon on the Zoom app. Nope, no requests.
Okay, now I'll officially adjourn. Thank you, everybody. Have a great rest of your afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.